Hello and welcome to the first ever recording of Retail Ramblings. Whether you're getting some shut-eye on the train, walking the dog, or you're stuck in traffic on the highway, the podcast is designed to be a casual and informative look at retail. I want to begin by introducing myself and also my colleague, Marcia Druka. My name's Christopher DeGrazia. I originally come from Australia and I'm still getting used to living in North America where I'm not seeing the sun every day. Currently working at Escuity, I have significant experience in customer-facing fields. My current role revolves around exploring and understanding retail and the current trends that are occurring within retail.
Hey there, my name is Marcia. I'm a marketing manager at Escuity, where I head up our content efforts. I started my career in consumer packaged goods over at Jarden, which is now part of Newell Brands, and then made my way over to tech. I'm a huge fan of podcasts myself, so I jumped on the chance to start this podcast and share my own experience.
Thanks, Marcia. So the structure of our show is pretty simple. We're going to be picking apart the world of retail with a fine-tooth comb in an honest, objective manner, focusing on recent news within the industry. Basically, we're going to be bringing the latest and greatest in retail out of the papers and pages and plugging it straight into your ears. We're going to begin with a look at the past week's retail winners and losers. Much like a medal system seen at the Olympics, we'll be giving out bronze, silver, and gold for the best performers and also looking at those who finish in the bottom three or the worst performance for the previous weeks. We'll go from here to look at the retail roadmap. This will be an in-depth look at the trends in retail that we've noticed from the last few weeks. And finally, we'll take the final few minutes to go for a bit of a data dive. The data dive looks at the brands and retailers that are leveraging data to get ahead of the game. I don't want to give away too much, but the conversation is probably going to include some companies that you've probably heard of. So our first section will be looking at the retail winners and losers for the last few weeks. We're going to begin with Marcia, who's going to take it away with the retail winners.
Sounds good, Chris. So I want to get started with Sephora, who I'm giving the gold medal to.
Okay.
So Sephora is using tech to thrive amid a retail crisis, and they're doing a really great job in the beauty industry. So as some of you may know, the beauty industry today is really influenced by influencers. So I'm talking about those videos that you see on YouTube where people are doing tutorials on how to apply your makeup. People that are really big on Instagram that have a huge following. And that's where a lot of trends are originating from in the beauty industry. And Sephora has really been able to jump on that. And what they've done is mix tech and innovative in-store promotions to be able to draw people and keep them in store and really influence their purchasing patterns. So when I talk about mixing tech into the beauty world, something that Sephora has done that I think is super innovative is launch a new app where people could pull it up and they could see all the products that are sold in Sephora, and they could actually virtually try these types of products using the app on their own face and see what it would look like. So for example, you know, maybe you want to go in there and find the lipstick shade. In the past, you would have to try different shades either on your hand or maybe if you're brave enough on your actual lips, and it would take a long time and you might walk out of there with chapped lips and without having found a shade that you like. With this new app, you can just pull it up on your phone and within seconds, you could try all kinds of different shades on your lips virtually through this app. And I thought that was super cool, and that's something that's really helping them sell a lot of product.
So Marcia, my question is, where does this stand from a demographics perspective? So to me, this sounds like a young person trend, correct me if I'm wrong, but I can see, you know, millennials using this, I can see 20-year-olds, maybe young 30s using a product like this, but where does your 50-year-old, you know, woman looking for beauty products shop, and how do they shop now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chris. And of course, I mean, looking at Sephora, they do go after a millennial demographic, that's for sure. But I don't think this kind of app, you know, holds people away who are in a different demographic. Actually, when I discovered this app for the first time, I was shopping in Sephora with my mom. And she was fascinated by this app, maybe even more than me. She was super excited to try it. It was really easy to use. She caught on really quickly, and she actually purchased some products as well. So I think the idea behind it is targeting millennials, but it's definitely not keeping other people away.
Sounds like a product I need to use.
For sure. I think there's a shade of lipstick out there for everyone, including you, Chris. So my silver medal goes to the Home Depot, and that's the next winner that I'm going to be talking about. So Home Depot has been in the news quite a bit recently. And, you know, there's been a lot of scary news in retail out there, but Home Depot is always on the positive side of things. So they've managed to prosper while a lot of retailers are shrinking or even collapsing. But did you know that they haven't opened any new stores since 2008?
Do you know what? I have heard that statistics and I'm still shocked by it. I honestly can't believe that.
Yeah, I was really shocked as well. But I read a little bit more into it. And it turns out that the way that they're growing is actually more sales per location and per customer. And that's really fueling the revenue rise and pumping up their profits. And the big reason for that is that they're really in the right business at the right time. So right now, what's going on in the economy is the recovery of home values. And that perfectly positions the Home Depot because people are going there and, you know, they want to be able to renovate their homes and buy product. So they've really jumped on the bandwagon at the right time.
So I'm going to jump in again. Something that we see often at Acuity, Marsha, is we see Home Depot vendors using HD Link and using products to be able to be more accountable. How much do you attribute this to the success of Home Depot?
Yeah, I think that's been a huge part of their success. So SKU optimization or retailers minimizing assortments is a big trend that we've seen in the industry recently. And Home Depot is huge on that as well. They're really smart with the products that they stock in their stores and, you know, looking specifically at different locations and what's selling better where. So they're really pushing for vendor accountability and, you know, they're looking at vendors to be using data to really prove their business case and explain why their products need to make the shelf and why they should remain on shelf.
Yeah, it's really fantastic.
Yeah, so Home Depot is doing great. And the last company that I want to talk about is Fabletics, and they will be getting the bronze medal. So Fabletics is an athleisure wear company, which was co-founded by actress Kate Hudson, and it's growing like crazy right now. For those of you that aren't too familiar with it, Fabletics basically has the value proposition of reasonably priced workout sets. And it started originally online as a subscription service, where customers were able to go onto the website and choose a top and a matching bottom or a complimentary set starting at $19, which is actually incredible. If you look at other players in the field like Lululemon and so on, it's a lot cheaper, but the quality is really there. So I was really pleased to find out that Fabletics is actually opening physical retail stores now. So they already had existing stores opened in late 2015. So there were 18 of those. Most of them were around 2,200 square feet. But they're planning 12 more new stores for this new year, which I thought was just incredible for a company that was started online to be able to perform so well and to be opening physical retail stores now.
Now, Marsha, I'm always a little bit skeptical of these brands created by celebrities. I don't know if you remember certain ventures by David Hasselhoff and Lil Bow Wow that, you know, with a great deal of hype, fell flat on their face. What do you think makes this different? What makes Fabletics different?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point, Chris. But first of all, I just want to say, you know, Kate Hudson, she's an amazing actress.
Hold on, Kate Hudson's got nothing to do with how successful the business is going to be. And I think this is where my skepticism born out of.
That's a different discussion. But no, I think what Kate Hudson has done here has actually been really brilliant. She's actually proven to be a really savvy business person on top of being a great actress. So she started this chain online. Like I said before, you know, it started out as a subscription service. And from there, she was able to learn so much about her marketing, about the people that she was targeting, about her pricing, about the brand messages and everything in between. And from there, she was able to grow the business and to pivot when needed. And I think it just shows that, you know, she grew it in the right way, that now she's able to take it from online and to open physical retail stores. So say what you will, but I think this one is set up for success.
We'll wait and see. I'm not holding my breath for Fabletics to take over the athleisure market. But again, prove me wrong, Kate Hudson. All right, so we've gone through our winners for the last few weeks. We're going to now look at our losers. This part here is kind of fun for me, and it's a bit disappointing, and I feel a little bit guilty about it, but I think you really need to see the lows to appreciate the highs. So we've gone through the highs. Let's have a look at some of the lows. To begin with, pardon the pun, but we're going to start with Lowe's. Now, Lowe's has seen sales at stores open for longer than a year not grow as quickly as expected. There's still been quite a large growth in those stores, but not as much as experts predicted. This is particularly relevant considering the performance of the Home Depot and the strength of the macroeconomic situation with the real estate market in the United States in general.
Chris, sorry, can I just jump in here?
Yeah, for sure.
Really surprised that you're bringing up Lowe's here. I mean, we just spoke about how well Home Depot is doing, and you would think that Lowe's is really similar and they're playing in pretty much the exact same field. Can you explain more about why are they doing so badly? This is really shocking to me.
Yeah, Marsha, I can. So you're spot on in saying that they, from a macro scale, they're definitely playing in the same field, but they go for different target markets. So Home Depot's traditionally targeted your high-spending professional contractors. Lowe's, in contrast, has always gone for the more mom and dad, do-it-yourself consumer. And these consumers are not spending as much money in store. And this has been a big reason that Home Depot's continue to be more successful over Lowe's. Another reason is Home Depot's been very conscious about improving its website, improving customer service, improving product offerings, and making everything very intuitive. Lowe's is yet to catch up in terms of this as well. And you can see this in the earnings report. So Home Depot's earnings have increased 16%. So Home Depot's doing extremely well in contrast to Lowe's. And a lot of this comes down to them taking a little bit more or putting a little bit more effort into those more intangible aspects of the brand. The next brand I want to speak about is Campbell's Soup. So Campbell's Soup is our second loser for the week. The reason that they're the second loser is they've also not had the greatest quarter in terms of performance. They've seen some of their staple products, such as their tomato soup, which I'm sure we all know not perform as well as expected. And this is kind of indicative of packaged food and the industry in general. The packaged food industry and food and beverage industries is quite slow in terms of adapting to change. And it's clear that the American consumer is moving more towards organic products, more towards fresh products, and more towards products that they know where they've come from and healthy products.
Do you think lack of innovation is part of them being a loser as well? I mean, I know that in retail today, really like the brands that are slower to innovate, they seem to be dying out. Do you think that Campbell's is relying too much on their traditional products and not really trying anything new?
I think it's a bit of a twofold problem with Campbell's. So I think, yes, that is a problem. But I also think with Campbell's, their brand is so strong in consumers' mind and so aligned with the tomato soup and canned tomato soup that it's difficult to extend into a different product category in which they're doing. So I think innovation, yes, is a problem, and that's somewhat indicative of the food and beverage industry in general. But I also think that the current brand image that people and consumers have of Campbell's makes it extremely difficult for them to pivot. So the third loser that I want to talk about for this week is Macy's. We're probably going to hear about Macy's more going forward. I'm sure we're going to hear more about Macy's going forward. But they've been a loser because we've seen more stores from Macy's close fairly recently. They've recently closed 100 more stores, and experts are predicting that there will be more closures in the coming future. Macy's is a barometer for department stores in North America in general. We've seen 3,200 stores close up until this particular point in time at department stores. And this is only expected to grow considering the growth of omnichannel, the growth of e-commerce, and the reduction of the influence of bricks and mortar on everyday retail.
Can I ask something here, Chris?
You can, Marsha.
So I think this is really interesting to contrast with Sephora. I mean, we just talked about Sephora in our winner section, and they're technically a department store as well. Why do you think that they're doing so well, and what can Macy's potentially learn from Sephora to be able to try to save themselves?
It's similar to the conversation we had about Campbell's Soup, and innovation is a keyword that we continue to bring up. Sephora is using technology to keep customers engaged and vendors enabled. Macy's is trying to do this and trying to pivot and make the change to do this. The issue is Macy's is doing this too little, too late. We've seen retailers like Walmart, we've seen retailers like Target, we've seen retailers like Ulta and Sephora already pivot 5 to 10 years ago and make the move towards technology. For the traditional department stores, again, it's too little too late. In the minds of consumers, they're seen as archaic, they're seen as stale, they're seen as old, while these young brands such as Sephora are continuing to grow due to the proliferation of technology in retail.
So the next section that we're going to jump into here is called the Retail Roadmap. And here we're going to take a deeper dive into some of the trends that we've been seeing in the retail industry recently. So the first thing that I want to start off with is this trend of personalization. So the retail industry in general is moving away from a product focus more to a customer focus. And with that comes this trend of personalization. Brands that are using technology and data to offer customers personalized experiences are actually seeing their revenue increase by 6 to 10%, which is 2 to 3 times faster than those that don't. Walmart and Nike are actually two great examples that I'm going to bring up here. So Walmart has actually opened a new technology incubator, which they're calling Store Number 8. And they're using this to invest in emerging technologies, including machine learning and artificial intelligence, both of which are key tool sets for personalization. Nike as well is doubling down on its investment into personalization trends, and they're introducing something called the digital membership, which I think is really interesting for you to take a look at. But with this trend, there comes a pretty big challenge. So consumers are starting to feel restless about all the personal data that's being collected on them, and they're almost torn between the two sides of it. You know, on one hand, it's great. They're getting really personalized promotions and offers that are really catered to their shopping habits. But on the other hand, some of them could actually start to worry about some of this data that's being collected and, you know, seeming a little bit invasive and creepy at times.
And to add as a quick personal anecdote, speaking of one of Nike's main competitor in Adidas, they did that exact thing for me. So I was recently in the market for some soccer cleats and I didn't end up purchasing the product, but noticed that immediately post the searching on their website, I was advertised constantly the exact pair of cleats. And to me, it's twofold. We leverage it as marketers here, but you know, it almost is counterintuitive in trying to continually advertise me a product when I know that you're stealing my information. It almost feels a little bit creepy and it makes me less inclined to want to purchase a product. I don't know. How do you feel about it, Marsha?
Yeah, Chris, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the key word here is going to be balance. And I think retailers and brands are going to find more balance going forward as, you know, as they keep learning about the best ways to do this. I mean, personalization is really, if you think about it, it's been something that's been introduced maybe in the last 5-6 years, and it's really picking up now. And I think more and more it's improving and there's more of a balance being struck.
Yeah, and this word balance is really good. It's a really great word that you've just brought up because it segues next into my next section. So Google's, or one of the big trends that we're seeing is shopping through search through Google. Now, this is something where balance is going to be essential for vendors in working out the best strategy behind advertising their products on Google. Basically, the short of it, what happens is when you put in key terms in a Google search and it matches a product key terms, you'll be advertised specific products on the right-hand side of a Google search results. It's also integrated into image search, so they'll do a very similar thing whereby it'll show you relevant products based on the keywords that you're using. So this here is an interesting proposition for brands and something that they'll definitely need to consider when moving forward. It's going to be almost like an SEO for shopping. It's going to prioritize the importance of positioning, of pricing, and of using keywords to make sure that your product appears.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Chris. I'm really glad that you brought that one up. And speaking of online, I wanted to share something cool that I found recently on Product Hunt. So this is called Retail in Real Time, and we'll include the link to this in our show notes. But basically what it is, it's a glimpse into how and where the U.S. is spending its cash and just how quickly these numbers are growing. So if you take a look at this link there, it has a bunch of different categories ranging from how much people are spending at Walmart to Amazon to fast food chains like McDonald's, all the way to firearms. And it's being updated in real time. It's really cool and almost mesmerizing to look at.
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at Amazon and Walmart, actually. I think that's the really telling comparison for me. It's Walmart's sales far outstrip Amazon on a per second basis we're basically looking at. But I think it's the innovation that Amazon's bringing to the table, and they're constantly pushing the boundaries that's making people really wary in retail of what Amazon's trying to achieve. but also really excited about the prospect of change that Amazon is bringing into the retail industry.
So the last section that we're going to jump into here is called the data dive. And here we're going to take a look at how some of the leading brands and retailers are using data to get ahead. So this week, I want to talk about this concept of big data, which is a term that we've been hearing a lot in the retail world, with both brands and retailers taking advantage of it in different ways. So I think we've all heard that story about Target, where they targeted pregnant mothers before they shared the baby news. So this was back, a few years ago, and the Target really started to take advantage of big data, but they didn't do it in the best way. So they started looking at purchasing trends to identify women who might be expecting a baby. So they were looking at purchases like unscented lotion, specific types of cotton swabs, things like that. And it would kind of indicate to them that a woman might be expecting, and they would start targeting those people with specific promotions to hook them early on and to hopefully retain them as a customer even after they delivered the baby. So I'm sure it sounded really smart to them at the time, but there was, the one case that made the news where there was a pregnant teen mom who hadn't even shared the news with her family yet, hasn't even told the father, and she started getting these mailers with cribs being advertised to her and diapers and things like that. So that was a little bit of a funny case.
I could imagine if I started to get advertisements for cribs and diapers in the mail, I'd be fairly concerned. So that is completely warranted.
Yeah, so I think her father was absolutely horrified when this was coming to the home address. And I'm sure, when the father himself found out that that wasn't the best way to do that either. So there's definitely a fine line to cross between convenience and creepiness there. But a good example of a retailer using big data is actually Costco. So they're able to use this kind of data to be able to target people who, for example, bought a contaminated product. So rather than sending out a blanket warning to everyone who shopped at that Costco recently, they were able to notify specific customers who purchased that particular item. So that's a really good way to use big data. And I think today the trend that we're seeing with big data is the question moving away from what do you know about me, more to how are you going to use what you know. And brands today are really becoming smarter about what information they use, when they use it, and how. And they're using big data to look at things like promotion performance, seasonality, and regionality. These are all variables that are becoming more and more important.
Yeah, and I think you'll find as well, Marsha, is with big data, it was a real fad maybe 5 years ago, but now we're getting the ability to use that data and glean insight from it, and that's when data is starting to become really, really powerful.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've come to the end of Retail Ramblings for another week. We've basically gone through and looked at the retail winners and losers, and some highlights for me is Marsha pointing out Fabletics, which I still think is a fad, and hopefully we can talk about it in 6 months' time and I'm going to be right and Marsha's going to be wrong, but
I don't think so.
The jury's still out. We've also gone through the retail roadmap and looked at some trends that we're seeing in the retail industry, and also a great summary of a data dive and looked at companies that have used data well and Target maybe not using data so well. So everything that we've talked about today will be included in the show notes, and we look forward to catching you for Retail Ramblings episode 2.